You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Friday, the 27th of November, 2015. Start to count down the shopping days till Christmas. Which is the same as the total number of days till Christmas now, because there are no days where you can't shop. Today is the number one shopping day in America. And a pretty big one here in Canada. It's Black Friday, the day after American Thanksgiving. And my emails were inundated with offers. Canadian retailers hawking discounts. Although some of them were really quite pathetic. I like Best Buy. I buy a lot of electronics at Best Buy. I don't have anything bad to say about them. But they sent me an email about their Black Friday deals. There was a deal on a DVD player. Now, don't ask why I was looking at this. But I had a lazy morning and I was just going through this stuff because this email came in. There was a DVD player. They advertised today only $2 discount. $2 discount. And I can't remember exactly what the price was. I think it was like $117 or something like that, marked down from $119. Really? Is that worth even posting? Is there anybody out there dumb enough to look at that and say, oh my God, got to take advantage of that. Sign me up. So be careful when you, if you're going to go home tonight and planning on spending some time online and trying to get some Christmas shopping done. Because not everything is a, 40 or 50% off. They try and suck you in. Let's discount everything by a reasonable amount, and then a couple things will just so we can say everything's on sale. A roundtable for you after 5 o'clock Eastern time, which is an hour from now. Damian Cox, Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange will join me. Meanwhile, your telephone calls, as we always do on a Friday afternoon. And if history is an indicator of where we're going to go today, there'll be lots of baseball. Or maybe we'll finally kind of go into cruise control for a couple of months on baseball. And you people will focus on other things. But in the meantime, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590. Those are all the phone numbers you can dial. They're all toll-free. They don't cost you anything. And we essentially take the calls in order. So if you call now, you'll get on. If you wait, you may not. We'll begin with Dan in Toronto. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I first off, just want to thank you for all the coverage during the playoffs. I look forward to getting in the car every day on my way home to listen to you talk about the Jays, and it was sad when that run ended, but I'm going to talk about the Jays again. And my question for you, I wanted to get your opinion, was I'm reading lots of articles, not sure whether or not I believe them, about David Price and whether or not we're in on the negotiations. I read something today about Boston apparently offering $30 to $40 million more.
Well.
It got me doing some research and thinking about our owners and Rogers being the company that owns us and the company that you essentially work for. Last year, I think the profit numbers I looked up online were $1.8 billion, give or take. You know, not sure if my numbers are right there, but we can agree that it was over $1 billion of profit. And I looked at the Jays' operating costs, and they lost about $15 to $20 million. I'm not sure if, and that was 2014. I'm not sure how they did this year. Why do you think we can't sign Price or pay the same kind of money that the Red Sox and Dodgers and Yankees do? Because as a fan, we showed the city and we showed the country and we showed the majors how much we can support a team. Why doesn't Rogers just do what we all want and step up and really pay the kind of money that it needs to have an upper echelon team in the majors? And I'll let you answer and keep up the good work.
Really thanks a lot. Thank you. You know, there's a whole bunch of issues at play there. Rogers can do whatever it wants. It has the money to do it. As a business with thousands and thousands and thousands of shareholders, do they have a commitment to those shareholders to maximize revenues and therefore maximize profits? And the answer is yes. Could they spend another $20, $30, $40, $50 million a year on this franchise and expect to recover all that money? Well, let me just say it's possible. If you put a competitive product on the field, what happens is you get more people at the stadium buying more merchandise, and you also get many times as many people listening on radio or watching on television, and those are revenue streams that are tangible. Now, I don't think for a second that Sportsnet or the fan accrued significant benefit from the run last year because it came late. It didn't come until August. Not a whole lot of buying is going on at that time. Rates have already been established. I know some extra money came in, maybe several million dollars, but I can't quantify exactly what it is. So on one hand, yeah, Rogers could spend more. On the other hand, Rogers has a fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders. The other issue that I've raised on several occasions is the value to Rogers in terms of customer satisfaction. You know, some very high percentage of you have Rogers things in your home. You watch television on Rogers cable. You use Rogers for your cell phone or your home phone. You use Rogers for your internet. A whole variety of things that you may or may not have. But, a significant percentage of the population does. We all love to complain about our cellular service, our cable bill, our this, that, and the other thing. And I've long perceived that companies like Rogers, like Bell, like Telus, when it comes to phones, are almost defenseless against irate customers who are unhappy with their experiences. There's a limited thing, some limited choice of things that you can do for the customer, but you're probably not going to keep them happy anyway. What I believe is that during the months of August, September, and into October of this year, complaints about Rogers virtually disappeared from social media and elsewhere. How do you complain about Rogers with justification when you're getting so much enjoyment from the baseball team that they own and have put on the field? So I believe that should be a big factor in the decisions that are made with regard to payroll and where they're going to go. Now, very quickly, having said all that, if the Boston Red Sox want to pay $30 or $40 million more for David Price than the next highest offer, and we believe that offer will be in the neighborhood of $200 million over 7 years, well, good luck to the Boston Red Sox. Because even though it's not my money, even though I endorse Rogers spending more on the Blue Jays, that it makes sense from a whole variety of perspectives. I don't believe David Price would be worth that kind of money. I don't think he's worth $35 to $40 million a year. I don't. I like David Price. I would be happy if he came back. But David Price isn't the only premier pitcher available. And he isn't necessarily what the Blue Jays must have. Want is one thing. Need is something entirely different. Would we be having, ask yourself this, would we be having this ongoing debate over the future of David Price if David Price had finished the year as a Texas Ranger? And the answer, unequivocally, is no chance. He'd be no more or no less on the radar than Cueto or any of the, or Zimmerman or any of the other free agent pitchers. Greinke. No more, no less. You'd have no attachment to him. Because he put a Blue Jay uniform on for 2 months, now all of a sudden things have changed. I understand that. I understand why that's happening. I'm not surprised by it. I'm not critical of it. I'm simply saying to you, there are other guys out there. Before we get all bent out of shape over whether David Price resigns with the Toronto Blue Jays or not, let's see what else is possible. Can you get something maybe not quite as good, but comparable for significantly less, which allows you to go and get yet another pitcher to help fill out your rotation, maybe in the $10, $12 million range? Is it smarter to get two guys for $30 million rather than one guy for $30 million? Well, obviously, it depends on who they are. But in principle, I would say, I can see that argument. If the Red Sox, if Dombrowski wants to spend the kind of money he's talking about for David Price, go ahead. If I were the general manager, if I were the CEO of Rogers, I would say we're not interested at that price. And the last point, I made this point before. I'd be willing to give David Price 3 years at $30 million or 4 years at $120 million. And if he signed a 4-year contract, I give him a two-year walkaway option. Same kind of deal as Roger Clemens. And while Clemens had good years after he was with the Blue Jays, they clearly got two of his best years, if not his two best years. And that's what you want to pay for. You want to pay for the good years. You do not want to pay for the bad years because that handcuffs you in so many different ways. So, David, here you go. Here's a 4-year deal. We'll give you the $30 million a year. If your value goes up after 2 years, if you're not happy, you can walk away. I would have no issue with that contract whatsoever. I'd make that offer right now. Do I think it would get him? Maybe not. Probably not. But 7 and 30, that's real hard. That's real hard to justify, even when it's somebody else's money. James in East York, hello.
Hey, Bob. Some stories coming out in Grey Cup week. There's some U.S. reporters that have never been up here during Grey Cup. They're writing about what, you know, fun it is, great time. They've never seen nothing like it. There was an excellent story written about your old partner, Jim Shakey Hunt. And it wasn't that long ago that Primetime Sports would have been out at the Grey Cup City. You had major involvement sitting on Grey Cup committees. Now, I know Rogers, for whatever reason you want to say, will barely cover this game. But from yourself, your own personal view, do you miss it? Do you miss not being out there with the wretches?
Nah, not even a little bit, to tell you the truth. You asked me on a personal level. I'm going to answer you on a personal level. I essentially gave up on the Canadian Football League a few years ago. We talked about it yesterday. I've had Very close friends in high positions with the Toronto Argonauts. Two of my closest friends were the presidents of the Toronto Argonauts. People that I see on a regular basis socially who come to my home that we go out to, you know, guys who are real good pals. Two of them were presidents of the Toronto Argonauts. Two other guys who became very good friends, David Cinnamon, Howard Sekulowski, owned the Toronto Argonauts while Keith Pelly was the president of the team. I was there. My family was there for every game. I was as into it as I could be. I've known commissioners, heads of marketing. I have been consulted on ideas, asked what I think about different things in a business setting. I don't have that passion anymore.
Is that because of the current owner or the current last owner? I know you and him didn't get along, but are you going to give the new guys a shot?
Well, I didn't know.
I've been to an Argo game in 4 years. Today I put down five deposits. Five of us are going.
Well, good. I got nothing against them. I don't know how to get re-engaged. I don't know how to save the Toronto Argonauts. I don't think a new stadium will do it. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think it's going to do anything really for the team. I have gone through this for a long, long time. One of my closest pals was Dick Thornton. When I was young, Tricky and I were tight. We shared a house together. We lived together when he was playing for the Toronto Argonauts. He came back from Hawaii after playing in the World Football League and moved into my place for about 6 months. Told me he was staying for a few days. And I got a long, long history with this franchise and with this league.
I know you do.
But I just can't get motivated by it anymore. It's not the quality of the product. It's maybe it's ownership. You know, I think the way that this league treated David Cinnamon and Howard Sekulowski before they essentially were forced to sell the franchise was despicable. How a league can abandon a couple of guys who lost millions of dollars owning the Toronto Argonauts, loved doing it. Both of them were unbelievably passionate about it. Lost millions and millions of dollars. And then when they asked for a little bit of help, just a little bit of help, they had the rest of the owners turn their noses up at them. And then, you know, had the franchise basically taken away from them. That's hard for me to forgive that and to understand why this league continues to operate the way it does. I've lost respect for this league. There are a handful of people that are still in it or that are in it now that I like very much. I'm happy for Jeff Hunt. I'm happy for the fans in Ottawa and for the Ottawa Rough Riders and being in the Grey Cup. I wish them well. But I just don't have that feeling anymore. And I'm not sure whether it'll come back or who will convince me to regain that feeling. I thank you for the call, though, and I'm glad you bought Argonaut tickets. I hope you won't be alone. Where are we going to next, please, as my screen goes dark? Eddie in Toronto. How are you?
Not bad. First of all, I know you're American, so happy belated Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
And secondly, about the Blue Jays, Tony LaCava, why are they searching for a GM when they should give the GM they have a shot? This is like a respected man around the league.
Well, I agree with you, and I don't pretend to know Tony nearly as well as I did Alex or Pat Gillick or many of the other guys who held that role, Gord Ash. But I have respect for him. I respect the fact that he has stayed here when he had other opportunities, better opportunities. And I see no reason to go and hire somebody else's assistant GM when you have one who, in my opinion, is more than competent. At the very least, I would give him the job for a couple of years and see what he does with it. I think that's the least they should do. But this is in the hands of Mark Shapiro, and he is a different thinker.
Exactly. And another thing is I think Price would sign for $30 million. I understand, 7 years is too long, but players should really have the opt clause. You know, by numbers, it doesn't work those long term. So players become unhappy because they don't surround themselves with the right teammates.
Well, I mean, I've told you how I'd pitch it, and I think it's logical. But we'll, you know, what is David Price's mandate? And we don't know the answer to that. He has indicated, has suggested perhaps, that he liked Toronto and would have no opposition to being back here. But will he take less money to be here? He hasn't said that. We don't know that to be true. I don't know how to read it. And trying to read it is a fool's game. I know that there are some connected and smart people out there that I like. You know, Rosenthal, Morosi, are first-class reporters. But a lot of what you hear from guys like that at this time of year, believe me, is mumbo-jumbo. It is not real. There is a necessity to be ahead of the curve when you do that job. To be ahead of everybody else in breaking scoops. And I don't believe that reporters do the kind of due diligence at this time of year that they would do at other times of the year. And so they throw things out that are half-truths or that some person with really no knowledge has just whispered in their ear. Well, I got to write something, so I'll write this. Now, I'm not saying that specifically of Rosenthal and Morosi, but there are dozens, even hundreds of baseball writers out there that, you know, the intrepid sports fan will read on a regular basis. But you cannot believe everything you read. I know that I am regularly critiqued when I say something and it turns out not to be true, or it turns out not to pass. Not that it's not true, but it doesn't happen. How does that affect you moving forward? Do you stop when you hear something? Or is it my obligation to pass along what I hear, what I'm told? The first obligation is to try and filter it, try and determine the legitimacy of the story or the report or the rumor or whatever it is, the whisper. Is it motivated by something else? Can you quantify the statement? Is there another source? I know how I operate, but I don't know how they operate. I can cite cases in, you know, with two guys I like in Morosi and Rosenthal who are friends. I can cite cases where both of them were utterly wrong. In both cases, different stories where they said one thing and the very next day, something else happened. And I won't get more specific than that. But these guys are good at their jobs. They're at the top of the food chain. What about all those other guys? What about the guys who never leave their mother's basement and do a blog every day? What are their connections? Where are they getting stories? I can pick up the phone and call almost any CEO of any major sports organization and get that guy on the phone. So can Rosenthal, so can Morosi when it comes to baseball. Doesn't mean that's going to be the source. But what's that guy who's got a blog who's sitting in the basement? Who's he talking to? What's his connection? How many years has he been doing that? And really, isn't he probably just making this all up? And if you throw enough crap at a fan, eventually, you know what you're going to get all over you. Some of it will miss. Maybe most of it will miss, but some of it will hit. And that's what disturbs me about the media today, especially the sports media. Rob in Woodbridge, hello.
Hey, Hey, Bob. So this is what I believe the Jays should do. They should make their offer, make it firm, their best offer, and not let price come to them. This is what happens when the Jays are so close and they fail. We get nothing. And I believe that the Jays need a backup plan. Maybe Kazmir, I've been saying this all along, two guys for the price of 30, maybe 32 million, 18 with...
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. When you look at what the need is, I mean, if you sign David Price as your starting rotation set, I don't think it is. I think you're still one short.
Two guys may set the rotation and...
Two guys, you're okay.
Yeah, two guys I'm happy, and I think all Jays fans would be happy, but it's when it comes down so close and then no cigar, that's when all Jays are going to get frustrated.
Yeah, but I mean, look at the Blue Jays, to the best of my knowledge, have not indicated anything about David Price, have not publicly stated they are interested or not interested in re-signing him, have not indicated what value they place on him, what they're willing to put on the table, how long a term, are we still stuck at 5 years, will they go longer with this new president? Is $30 million too much? I don't, you know, what we don't want, what we need to do is all of us relax and wait and see how this thing unfolds. Not a single high-profile starting pitcher has signed out of free agency yet. Not one. We are expecting in the early weeks of December that will change. But could it take till January? Sure it could. The other complicating factor is that we are led to believe that the trade market is very, very active. A lot of teams looking to make deals. When that happens, it complicates free agency. Not only in terms of time, but in terms of evaluating options. If there aren't a lot of trade talks, your options are slim. You become focused on the free agents, at least for a period of time. Well, now all of a sudden, how many starting pitchers from other organizations are available for trade? I don't know the answer to that. All I know is it's very, very active. Some general managers have indicated it is the most active of any offseason they have seen. Now, that hasn't materialized yet in terms of the quantity or quality of deals, but the expectation is that it will. And historically, the winter baseball meetings have been a place where these deals have been transacted. Not so much lately, because the winter baseball meetings aren't what they used to be, but maybe this will be the exception. Maybe this will be the year where general managers go crazy and we get 2, 3, 5 announcements a day of significant trades. But until the dust settles, trying to evaluate where this team is going to be come February when camp opens is really impossible. One more and then we'll take the break. Pat in Newfoundland, hello.
Good day, Robert. Different change of pace for you. Hockey this time. Everyone's concerned about the goaltenders' equipment and their safety and whatever. I can appreciate that. But what if they went back to wooden hockey sticks? That way the puck's not coming off the stick at such a blazing speed for to hurt the goaltender. Besides that, all the people that are shooting, you see a lot, they get a great shot and they break the damn stick.
Yeah, it happens with wood too, but it happens more frequently with the
yes, I just want the ones we use now.
I look at I'm not buying the goaltenders have to be protected. Goaltenders, when's the last time you saw a goaltender get hurt on a shot where it made him sit on the sidelines for an extended period of time? Goaltenders pull muscles. That's what they do. You pull muscles. That's how you get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, guys firing at 110 miles an hour, doesn't bother them. I played goal in an era, I know, obviously not at the NHL level. Far, far from it. But, you know, you went home after a game or even after a practice And you had bruises all over your body. Every place a puck hit you, you had a bruise. Because the quality of the padding that we had was negligible. You know, I started watching hockey when goaltenders didn't wear a mask. The only one who wore a mask was Jacques Plante. He was the only one. To look at video of that today is crazy.
Shots weren't as hard, and they weren't going to the net as much then either.
Well, I get that to a certain extent, but Bobby Hull could fire it. There were guys that could shoot it hard. It's hard for me to imagine that Bobby Hull, with the technology that exists today, wouldn't fire it as hard or harder than anybody in hockey today. I'm supposing. I don't know. But back then, goaltenders got bruised. You got welts. Goaltenders today can retire from the game without a mark on them. Go take a look at, you know, a 70, 80-year-old goaltender, or former goaltender, more accurately. There's stitch marks all over the place. I don't want goaltenders to be afraid to stand in front of a shot. But I don't want 6'6" fat guys standing in the net, taking up space, blocking shots. I want to see goaltenders react. I believe that an integral part of goaltending is the ability to react to a shot, to move towards a shot, whether it's with a glove, a stick, a pad, whatever it happens to be. Reflexes used to be what goaltending was about. Anticipating a shot, anticipating it's going to go. You know, if you put me in a Marshmallow Man suit, I'd probably play goaltend the way they do. If you reduce the size of the equipment, you do not necessarily have to reduce the level of protection. That will open up shooting alleys for shooters, and it will improve the game. I don't think it's nuclear science, and for the life of me, I do not understand why hockey in general, the NHL specifically, has been so tardy in addressing this most critical problem, a problem that is, quite frankly, destroying the entertainment value of this sport. We'll come back with more of your phone calls when primetime continues. This is the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Before the hour, your telephone calls continue at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Top of the clock, Damian Cox, Elliot Friedman, Michael Grange for the traditional Friday roundtable. Back to the phones, Jay in North York. Hello.
Oh, hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to tell you something I heard, something I think, and I'd love to hear your opinion. So what I heard was that Mark Shapiro is not looking to spend a lot of money on an ace, you know, the three or four guys a lot of people have been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be adding a middle-of-the-rotation starter with the belief that the Blue Jays are going to outscore the opposition. Now, after 100 games last year, the Blue Jays outscored the heck out of the competition, and they were a 500 team. When they started to really make some headway was when, Estrada and Dickey pitched really well. Stroman came out of injury, and of course Price. So in essence, Stroman and Price were almost like adding two aces. The Blue Jays need an ace. They need an ace to solidify their contendership, for lack of a better term.
Okay, define an ace.
An ace is David Price, Zach Greinke, maybe Zimmerman, maybe trading for an ace if they want to throw Tulowitzki at a team who really, really needs a shortstop and is willing to give up someone like Matt Harvey from the New York Mets, something like that. The thing is, if David Price right now, and the rumors are that he's looking at Boston because Boston's willing to throw them a ton of money, and David Price doesn't like Boston. It's not a good pitcher's park for lefties. He apparently has a bad history with David Ortiz, even though Ortiz will probably be gone. And I would imagine he would probably rather pitch here. Now, I'm a Rogers shareholder, and I looked up the annual report, and last year they had $12.5 billion in sales, and for the first time in their history, they declared a $5 billion profit. Now, most of this is in telecommunications and in cable, I know, and I think the other is only 2 or 3%. But the extra $20 million a year, let's say signing a guy like Price versus signing a guy like, I don't know who, any other guy.
We all know that they can afford it, and you made the point. You made the point very accurately, and I thank you for that. And I don't disagree with you. I've said repeatedly, this company can afford to do whatever it wants to do. The question for me is, the expectation cannot be an unlimited budget. There has to be some limitation to it. Are you willing to give David Price $30 or $35 million a year on a seven-year contract, take the chance in the last 3 years of the contract he can't pitch anymore and you're still saddled with that? Or are you better off to accept that what you have is one of the most prodigious offenses in all of baseball and what you need is guys who will give you innings and be competent? I'd love to have David Price. I'd love to have Price and Zimmerman. But I think you have to be realistic. There's a part of me that says, if you're going to take $30 million and invest it in starting pitching, why not invest it in two good starting pitchers? Not David Price, top of the food chain type guys. I don't need a guy who goes out and holds the opposition to one or two runs a game. I'm going to take my chances, like you said, with an offense that can generate boatloads of runs, an average of 5.5 runs a game. You give me a pitcher who can give me an ERA around 4, preferably a bit lower, but in the 4 neighborhood, I will win more than half my games. I think we have two starting pitchers in Stroman and Estrada who will win significantly more than that because they're better than that. I would expect their ERAs to be no higher than 3.5. In that scenario, I expect they can win 60 to 70% of their games. Those are the kinds of numbers that add up to a division championship. Again, don't get me wrong. Be happy to get David Price. But I would rather not have David Price. I'd rather be in a situation where if I got David Price, do I have to take, because I've spent all the money I have to spend, do I have to take somebody I don't know anything about? Somebody who's not even a 500 pitcher? Somebody who's injury prone? You know, fill in the blank. Do I have to go into my bullpen and convert one of my back-end relievers into a starting pitcher? Those are things I don't want to do. I understand you may have to, but I don't really want to. So this, again, the obsession with Price is a function of David Price having been here for 2 months and pitched great down the stretch. And crummy in the postseason. If David Price had finished the year in Detroit, we are not having any of these conversations. William in Winnipeg, hello.
Hello, Mr. McCallum. Thanks for taking my call. Three quick comments.
Yep.
I just want to thank you so much for saying the way it is about the NHL. You're the only one on TV or radio who said so. It is dull. I mean, I would rather watch a nice classic game than a live NHL game today. And in leading into that, the debate about the goalie equipment, they used to have that old bracket for the sticks, or the curve of the sticks. Just check the goalies, narrow the pads a bit, take the bracket at the start of each period, done, over with. If it's out of the bracket, it's a two-minute penalty, you're out, the backup goes in. It'll solve that problem, and more goals will be scored, and then they're still protected in the upper body. My third comment is, going back to the 90s hockey, like, there's a simple fix for the NHL. They can add 100 extra inches of ice. They could put the respect back into the hitting player, not the player getting hit, but the hitting player. And I know this, change the shoulder pads. Go back to the 90 shoulder pads. It's an extra 5 inches of shoulder on these new shoulder pads. And it's 100 inches of ice. And you try and get around a guy with old shoulder pads to new shoulder pads, and that's why we have what you call that cluster around the boards, up and down the boards, all game long that you call about. A simple way to change it. You cannot move with these shoulder pads. And a fourth, if you'll allow me, I agree with you on David Price. Absolutely. I'd rather go for that guy with that middle three or high three ERA and have that cash in there.
Well, give me two of them. I can get two of them for the same price as David Price.
Exactly. And it's to have the guy.
And understand, too, the Blue Jays don't have four starting pitchers that they can lock in. So they're looking for one guy.
Yeah.
They need at least two.
Exactly.
Even if you sign David Price, you still got to go figure out who your other guy is going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't want somebody off the scrap heap that I'm throwing out there with my eyes closed. We don't know if Hutch is going to come back. You know, Hutch could come back and be a number one starter again. He looked awful last year, but I'm not writing him off. But I don't know. So if I'm the general manager, I'm saying I need two guys. So if Price is going to be one, do I still have enough money to go get somebody else who's decent? And the answer probably is no. So maybe you aim a little lower. Maybe you go to Zimmerman and maybe you can get him for 20. Now that leaves you 10, maybe 12 to go get somebody else. That seems to make more sense to me. But look, if they sign Price, I'm okay with it. Don't get me wrong. I thank you for the call. I don't disagree with anything you said. I don't have a name here. I have an arrow, but I don't have a name. Oh, yes, I do. Phil, hi. We have you on primetime.
Phil, hi, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, we got you.
You actually just touched on my question. It's about Drew Hutchinson and why he's kind of been ignored in all of this. Don't get me wrong. I understand his ERA is at 5.5, and his win-loss total at 13-5 is kind of, deceiving. But at the end of the day, he's still a quality fifth guy. And my question is, should we not be focusing more on kind of the issue of Encarnacion, Colabello, Smoke, and how we can find a way to get Colabello in the lineup more often? And if, in my opinion, if you trade Encarnacion and all of a sudden you got Smoke and Colabello DHing playing first base, does that not take some money off the books, allow you to go off after a starter like, say, Jordan Zimmerman?
Well,
like that?
If you need the money, that's one way to get it. I love Colabello. I got no problem with Colabello at first base. But I also love the idea of going out and getting Davis. And it allows you to make other moves that may solve your pitching woes. I'm not sure what it would take to get a middle-of-the-rotation starter away from another team. But if you start with Encarnacion and maybe Colabello, maybe Smoke, not all of them to one team, but some kind of a three-way deal, something like that. And then you sign Davis, and now you got a power bat from the left-hand side to go with all the power you have on the right-hand side. Eek. That impresses me, too. And maybe you can help your pitching at the same time. Music's playing. We got to go. Roundtable's next. We'll talk about all this coming up.